This is episode number 362, dated Friday, May 31st, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hey, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be here today. This is episode number 362, dated Friday, May 31st, 2024. With us, as always, we have Peter O'Toole from Coos Bay, Oregon. Peter, what's going on?
To answer your question, Bob, it's very, very windy here in Coos Bay, but it's sunny and nice. But there is a storm coming up off the coast, bringing a bunch of rain tomorrow night and much of Sunday. So we haven't quite shaken off Oregon rains yet.
Let me take this opportunity then to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be aired. We start out with our media sources. Thank you for doing what you do, airing us when you can. We appreciate the support. Also, Raymond Gay, our producer and editor. Thank you for what you do. Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place, you post our shows on the bulletin boards on your chat service, and we thank you for that. Let's also thank Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, because you archive our programs on my website, which is www.brancoevents.com. Just go there, arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will see all of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
All right, and I want to thank Trish also. Trish, once again, is our host for today, and we appreciate you taking the time, Trish, to help us out. Thank you for that. We were supposed to have a guest. Jo Elizabeth Pinto was scheduled to be on our show today. She was having some technical issues and apparently will not be with us, but I think she would appreciate knowing that we can still talk about her book, which is entitled Braided Love. It's a young adult novel. And I know, Peter, you have a lot to say about the book, so I'm going to let you start out. And Joe, we're going to miss you. We expected you on. We understand the problems, and we hope that they can be resolved, you know, at some point. Peter?
Yeah, so I'm going to encourage other people who have read the book to unmute and react to what I'm about to say, because people may have different takes on these things, and that's terrific. So I've always been a fan of Joe's writing. She's written a book of poetry, as I remember, and a book called The Bright Side of Light, Bright Side of Darkness, as I remember, and which I really liked. Braided Love, as Bob said, is a book for, you know, for young adults. I'm guessing folks in junior high school, probably. And it has to do with a city girl who is in foster care, assigned to a family as a foster family in the rural part of the state of Colorado, as it happens. And there's a lot of tension and things that go on as a result, because she has no interest in living in the burbs, in the rural parts where it's agriculture and horses and cows and lots of hard work. And she resents it at first and then grows to respect it because of a number of things that go on. And book sort of talks about that connection. It talks about the connections within families, within the family that hosts her as a foster child. And Joe's sort of background as a social worker really puts her in good stead here, because she had experience working in the system and experiencing the challenges that comes up. So one of the things that struck me about the book, well, two things really. The first thing is how family is defined. We all sort of talk about family as mother, father, you know, kids, and so on and so forth, you know, this typical family. But her definition of family and the foster kids' definition of family over the course of the book becomes broader. It's a group of people who live together, who support each other. They might be part of the family or they might not. And so there are characters in the book who are play important roles who are really not part of the family, but are considered family by the folks who run the ranch. And there's a lot of talk about that in the book. What does a family really mean? And I thought that was really interesting the way she develops that theme. And the other related topic is the title, Braided Love. Why that title? It's an interesting title. And if Joe were here, I would ask her to talk about it. But since she's not here, I'm going to give my take on things. And that has to do with there is a sort of rug that's woven, which the weave is struck together in such a way that everything is connected to everything else. So the braided love piece is really a woven tapestry on the floor, as it happens. It's a rug that sort of weaves together all the various strands, sort of symbolic of the way family is. I thought it was a nice way how she sort of talks about it in various ways at the beginning of the book and very much at the end, at the epilogue, and how the rug is passed down from generation to generation, and how kids crawl on it and play on it, and how adults walk on it, and so on and so forth. It's a really sort of nice, symbolic sort of way of family being described. What I would like to do, if anybody would like to unmute and sort of talk about, react to what I've said, and want to react to any other parts of the book that I haven't talked about. There's a lot in the book.
That's a good idea.
So, anybody who's read the book or knows Joe, I would welcome their comments.
And if you want to raise your hand, Trish will acknowledge you and you can get to speak on it.
We're changing the rules a little bit this time because we don't.
Yep. We're flexible.
We are flexible. So, and the other thing I would encourage the rest of you to think about is, since we don't have a guest, I'm thinking about old school talk radio, where sometimes there would be a free topic. We could talk about anything reasonable that you want to talk about. So if people want to raise their hand.
We have one.
Let's do it.
Alex Massa.
Alice.
Yes. Welcome.
I just want to give you a quick update. I just spoke with Jo Elizabeth and she is still trying to get in, and I gave her a suggestion, and we have two things that she's going to try. So hopefully she'll eventually get connected.
Okay. Well, thank you, Alice, for that.
You're welcome.
Is there anything else?
And Tony has a
hold on.
Right?
Alice?
Yes.
Is there anything you want to say about the book, or you want to wait till?
Oh, I've read it and it's a wonderful book. It's one of those that is told from various points of views, the different characters, points of views. And so at the onset of each chapter, there is a title followed by the name of a character. And that particular chapter is told from the point of view of that character. And this is, as many of you know, and I know many of you read so much, you've read some books of this type. And Jo Elizabeth just does an outstanding job with this type of novel that is much more contemporary. And I really applaud her for doing this so well with a variety of characters. It's not just back and forth between two characters. It's multiple characters in the book. And I really think that many of you would enjoy reading this book and recommending it for teenagers as well. But I think adults would also just gather much from this book. The description in it, the detail. She's crafted an extremely fine book. I greatly enjoyed reading it.
Yeah, so I thank you, Alice, for reminding me about the different chapters being spoken about from a different perspective, which is interesting. I right now am in the process of hanging around with two 11-year-old step grandkids who are reading lots of young adult stuff, and so I'm reading a lot.
Okay, I think I'm here now. I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry. I've had nothing but trouble.
We understand the issues very well, Joe.
We made it.
We really do.
We made it.
Hold the audio.
So we started talking a little bit about your book. A description has been said, and we've already had a couple of comments about the work that you've done in the book. Peter has given us a synopsis, and we've already had Alice talk about how she felt about it. And we had opened the door to our participants. So
thank you, Peter. Thank you, Alice.
So, but before, now that we have a guest, let's have the guest say a few words. So welcome, Joe. And I understand technology can be very cranky, as we all know. So before we talk about your sort of take on the book, talk about who you are in addition to an author. What is your prior history, your background? You know, some people know about your background, some don't. So talk about that a little bit.
I am blind since birth. I just turned 53 years old. I was mainstream just when that became possible. So I was one of the only disabled students in school. So I think that really shaped me as a person and shaped who I became as an author. I became a real advocate in my adult years for kids who didn't have a voice. And I became a real mentor for kids who didn't have a voice. And I think that influenced this book. I also, as an author, really have tried to include disabled actors as necessarily the focus of the book, but just as human beings who happen to be part of the world in the book. I think that is something we need to see as readers. People with disabilities who just happen to be living their lives and might not necessarily be part of the story. Well, they are part of the story, but they're not the focus of what we're talking about. I think that may start to change, slowly change the narrative for people with disabilities who are in the world. So I'm trying to do that as an author. I'm so a little out of sorts, but I hope that's what you were looking for.
Let me sort of focus on a couple of those points. Talk about how your experience mentoring people, any way you define mentoring younger people or whatever, influenced how you wrote the book.
My first husband, right after we were married, started having issues with his legs and other symptoms, and he ended up being diagnosed a couple years later with Luke Gehrig's disease. And so
ALS.
We lived in, yes, ALS. And so we ended up living in some pretty rough neighborhoods, and we ended up being the available adults because a lot of the other parents were either working or off doing crazy things. And so there were a lot of kids who had a vacuum that we ended up filling, and our house became sort of a hangout point because kids really need that adult presence in their lives that they weren't getting. And so we dispensed Band-Aids and helped with homework and gave relationship advice and baked cookies and taught kids how to ride bikes and just became adult central. And that continued for years and even to some extent into my life now. My husband has been gone a long time, but I have a daughter now, and her friends a lot of times hang out here at my house because I work from home. And so I just have always been available. And I've enjoyed that.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. What prompted you to write this particular book?
Again, I started this book in high school. I wrote a couple of short stories, and I didn't turn this one in. This just was another one that I came up with. And I found this last summer. It was a partial story, and it was in a notebook that I dug up from a box in the garage. And it wasn't all the way written and it wasn't even completed, but I thought it, the characters were there and I thought it held a spark of something I could work with. So I took it to my writers group and they said, well, yeah, there's a lot there. And some of them gave me some ideas. I had a friend in high school who was adopted and that was kind of a starting point. And then I had someone in my writers group who also was adopted. And so she helped me with some of that. And I had another friend along the way in my life who had a son who had Down syndrome. So that kind of played into it. But really, it was the quest for knowing the biological family. I also had someone in my immediate family who gave up a child, and there was that whole story. So I was kind of inspired by a lot of that to explore that.
One of the themes of your book, it struck me, is the whole issue of what is a family. I talked about this a little bit before you came on, but what does family mean to you?
Family means a lot more to me than who you're related to. I've had some issues with that in my life, that family is not always who you are related to. Family is who is there for you, who takes care of you, who is, who comes when you need them, who supports you at the times in your life when you need someone to be there. And sometimes that's who you're related to by blood, and sometimes it's not. I have a word for that in my life, and that's soul family. And it's different for some people, but sometimes in your life you're going to find that people are closer to you who are not related to you, and that's okay.
And that's a really theme of yours in The Bright Side of Darkness, as I remember. You know, mm-hmm. that community that really does become a family. You know, they aren't really family.
Right.
They aren't biological family, as it were, but they're
some, really, right.
Sometimes family is who you want them to be, outside of your real right. family, of course. If you want to regard other people as family, that's certainly a good thing if they're close to you.
And it's always, it's a human need, but sometimes your people who are close to you, who are related to you by blood, can't provide that for whatever reason. And so you find that elsewhere.
So you mentioned disability as a theme of this particular book. Talk about, without giving away too much of the plot, talk about the various disabilities and how they sort of interact, the characters.
Well, in this book, there are two of them have obvious disabilities and one of them has dyslexia, and that all becomes part of the story in sort of interwoven ways, although they're not necessarily the plot driving characters. One of them is mute and one of them has a back issue. And it just becomes part of the way the story is built around them, but they don't necessarily, well, none of them lose their disabilities, which I find that annoying in sort of most of the media stories where they get better and then they all live happily ever after. And so then it gets portrayed as the only way to be happy is to be healed. And I find that really problematic. But in this story, none of them loses their disabilities. One of them, you know, works hard to work through his disability, finds that he can study and get some help and maybe go to college, which at the beginning of the story he is very hopeless about.
It's all about success, Joe. Whether you have a disability or not, it's all about how you handle your life, how successful you can be, what drives people, you know, despite whatever ailments or, you know, for lack of a better term, disabilities or not, we have.
Right.
And I would add, I've said, the support that we as a community provide each other.
Right. Right. And it may be that success for one person is going to be differently defined than success for someone else. You know, one person may be content with one level of success or one definition of it, where someone else may want to take a different path and work for something different.
One of the things I liked about the way you handle disability in this book is that all of them had strengths that were talked about, you know, hard work or strength or wisdom or whatever, you know. So it wasn't, the disability was certainly woven into the book, but these people also had strengths that were also highlighted. And sometimes you get the disability, not the strength. And I really thought it was a nice
thing. Right.
Of the two in this particular book. Another theme of the book that I found was sort of city versus rural. What prompted you to take that particular attention in the book?
I kind of grew up with that. You wouldn't know it now from where I live, but I grew up in a cow town. And there was always, you know, people who wanted to leave as soon as they could get out of school and hop the first bus or whatever. And then there were people like me who were pretty content with things the way they were. So I always had that tension, I guess, in my life here. And now this is just another suburb of Denver, but it's probably doubled in size, maybe more, maybe triple from when I grew up here. So I guess I was feeling that when I wrote the book, how my hometown has changed.
And just out of curiosity, has it changed for the better in your perspective, or how has it changed for the better and how has it not?
Well, there are some of both, but my daughter is going to school here now, and it's a very different experience from when I grew up here, and I'm not sure that it's all for the better. I don't know. I mean, you can't really quantify that.
But it's interesting for me because I was raised around cities. I was raised around and lived in New York City and Boston and Washington, D.C. And then I moved to Columbia, Missouri, which is not a city, but it's a college town. And now I live in Coos Bay, Oregon, which is a very rural, small town feel. It's very, very different. And one of the things that's going on here is it has potential over the next 5 years of growing exponentially, because the Coos Bay port might turn out to be a deep water port, which would mean, and there's a whole lot of conversation around here. You know, do we want that? Do we as a Coos Bay town want this additional thing? And do we have a choice?
Do you have a choice?
Yeah. And it really isn't sort of an interesting dynamic that's happening around here. I think it's going to get exponentially more complicated over the next couple of years as this continues. I digress, but I get your sort of tension. It is the real thing. And it's clear in the book that you're not wildly in favor of your sort of stereotypical city person. You know, the person in the city has a lot to learn about life by moving into the small town.
Right. Well, I don't know that I'm not in favor of it, but it's hard to watch because this town used to be pretty peaceful. And now there was a shooting less than a block from my house. And there's been a hostage situation on my street. And yeah, I'm not in favor of all of that.
But yet I wonder, living in a small town. I mean, I'm used to living in a city where people are on top of each other and all the things that happen as a result, the crime, the homelessness, the drugs and all that stereotypical stuff. But what I've learned here is that, Coos Bay is a great place and the same things happen here too. It's just that it's a bigger space.
Right.
They're more easily hidden.
Sure.
A huge homeless problem here. And,
Well, and we've had homelessness here too. It's just, like you said, it's more easily hidden. And there's a problem in small places with gossip, and I tried to portray that in the book, that people know things about each other, and it goes through the grapevine, and I tried to portray that with the people telling people about other things, and, Graham finding out about the waitress's asthma from somebody, and I don't know, little tidbits like that.
So, Joe, you have a social work background, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong about that.
Yes. Well, I have a degree. I didn't get hired, but.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's very good. I can see why that would happen. You have a lot of insight into people.
Yeah. I would imagine that's really, really, puts you in good stead in writing this book. You sort of understood how the foster care system works, which is not always great.
No, I have that, and then my brother adopted a child through there, so I have some knowledge of how that works. Or doesn't.
Well, I have two more questions before we throw it open. One is, why the title? Title's brand. Why the title?
I was sort of imagining a braid as to how a family gets put together. I also raised stepchildren. And so I kind of thought of the family as a braid between the family that was and the family that came to be. You never really, I kind of think the melting pot is not a very good description for our country either. It's more like a braid of what your culture was and your new culture put together. It never completely melts together into a new thing.
So a
braid.
So your definition of a braid in this case would be like a connection.
Right.
You've used the word interwoven several times in this conversation. When I think the word braid, I think of interwoven. So
I like that a lot better than something like a candle that completely melts. And I never liked that, even when we used to study all that in school, I never was comfortable with that.
It is a funny term, melting pot, now that you brought that up.
Yeah,
Joe.
I've
grown up with that term in my head because people always refer to the United States as a melting pot, but I can see where that could be a strange connotation.
I think it's comfortable for the dominant culture. Oh yeah, we melt together, but I never liked it as a person of color.
Yeah.
Like it would take away everything that a person of color stood for.
Yeah. And to some degree, disability too, right? I mean, we don't, it's complicated. I agree with you. I think the melting pot is not the best image of who we are.
Right.
And then your audience, who did you write the book for? Who's your audience?
Well, I mostly wrote it for young adults, teenagers who are struggling with issues of not fitting in or whatever, and particularly for girls, especially with what happened to Kathy in the city, and I wanted them to know they could stand up to pressures like Sue was experiencing, where she said no. But I know I have an adult audience as well, and I think they would enjoy the book, especially older women who have lived the rural lifestyle. So I'm mostly for young adults, teenage girls, but I think there are a lot of women who would also enjoy that book.
Yeah, I was saying before you joined, I have two step grandkids who are 11, and I think this might be a really good book for them.
Right.
They're reading a lot of stuff these days, and this might be a good.
Yeah, the younger and younger girls need to know about certain things. So I would be comfortable with someone that age reading that. I was not very explicit for that reason, but I really think girls need to know that they have the power.
Joe, you
decide.
You're muffled.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think that young girls need to know they have the power to decide how their lives are going to go in certain ways. You know, they have the power to say no.
And what's really important in your book is that you highlight how adults give those young girls that power in, you know, that family. Mm-hmm. Somehow in the moment that was it, Kathy has her problems in Denver with somebody, major problems, you know, that she finds the strength to say no. Which really came from the adults in the rural part of the book, you know, that's made pretty clear that she gained the strength through doing what she was doing on the farm to deal with the crisis that she was experiencing. I don't want to give away the plot, but
right.
I think there really is some truth to that. And it really is important for us adults. And I've become conscious of this over the past 15 years at raising stepkids and raising now being a, you know, step grandkid. That we really do have a part to play. I know this sounds really obvious, but a part to play in empowering kids, women, men, whoever, but to, you know, to do the right thing, as it were.
We do. And I think it comes from not necessarily just teaching our kids to do what we tell them. And sometimes that's hard in the moment because we want them to just do what we tell them. But sometimes we have to teach them to think for themselves.
And the best way we can do this is to think for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Really, Joe, before we open it up, Joe, I just have one question. I'm a little inquisitive here. What do you think of today's education in our public school system?
It's complicated. I don't always like everything about the education that's being given. I think sometimes our kids don't know everything that we knew. I think teachers are doing the best they can, and they're under a lot of pressure.
There are a lot of subjects that I don't feel are being emphasized in school as much as they were when we were younger.
I hope that teachers are teaching kids how to think and how to look stuff up.
That concerns me. I'm hearing a lot about a lack of emphasis on critical thinking, and I'm not sure who to blame for that. I'm not here to blame anybody, but it seems to be a general consensus amongst a lot of people, either those that have kids or know people in the system that feel that way.
It's a complicated topic. I don't know. I have a kid in the system, and I think she knows how to think, but I've always emphasized that, and I don't know. There's probably a whole show we could do on that.
I agree. So, Trish, who do we have for guests? Any hands raised at the moment?
This is In Perspective. This is Peter, and that's Bob. And any hands raised, as Bob asked.
Our guest is Jo Elizabeth Pinto, author of Braided Love.
We actually have two hands raised. The first one is Deanna.
Deanna, how are you? Welcome.
Hi. Hi, Jo.
Hi, I'm glad you're here.
We've never met in person, but we've sort of touched because we belong to the same writing group and just because I'm not exactly sure how we first connected, but we have.
Right, I don't know.
Over the years. I did live in Colorado at one time, but we never came across each other there.
We never came across each other. Too bad.
Yep. But I think that one of the things that to me, a braid is stronger than the individual strands.
That's true too.
Because whether you're talking about a lead rope or, as Peter intimated, a woven rug or...
And I had both in the book.
Yeah.
Both
or
of those
even
are in...
long hair. You know, mm-hmm. a braid is stronger than the strands itself. And
that's
that
true.
Is what I think that we can learn about life. It doesn't matter as much who gave birth to you, but it's who sees you
mm-hmm.
and holds out a hand and indicates, I see you, I understand. That's what kids need is not judgment and putting them down because of the way they dress or behave as much as talking to them and not lecturing them, but just listening a lot of the times and letting them work it through so that they come to their own conclusions. And it's the time that kids don't get because parents mm-hmm. are holding down jobs and are busy just trying to keep a roof over their heads sometimes. Mm-hmm. Kids are too much thrown on each other for company. And your friends don't know any more than you do about life.
Right.
And so you need to look around you and look for those people that have the ability to listen and to see you. And that's what kids
well,
really need.
Well, and we all need to look for the kids that are, and I feel like I've done this, and if people would do this more, the world would be so much better. Look around your neighbors and your nephews and the kids at the bus stop and whoever you can who is at odds, at loose ends. And even if it's just a few minutes a day or whatever you can give the kids at church or wherever you are who just seem to be floating through and are not having an adult influence in their lives, take them and get a soda at Burger King or talk to them after school as they're walking home or whatever, and just be that adult.
Sure. I mean, and it's not hard. It's not hard as long as you are willing to accept them and not judge them because they got tattoos or multicolored hair.
Not give them what they should be doing. Just listen to where they are and be there.
I got to tell you a funny story about braids. I think you were all. Mm-hmm. So both of my twin step grandkids have very long hair that they're braided. And I was standing next to one of them and she turned around suddenly and hit me in the face with one of her braids.
Oh,
yes.
Yep.
It was very funny. We all laugh about it. I was sort of startled, but it was funny. You know, wrong place.
Well, if you've ever been around a horse, you don't want to be hit with a braided tail either.
No, you don't.
No, that's almost like a weapon. No, you don't want to get hit with one of those.
Well, I just remember one of our horses when he was all dressed up for shows and things with his mane braided and his tail braided. And if anyone picked up a whip and tried to flick him with it, he would flick them with his tail.
I'll get you.
Yeah, don't you hit me. And
I hit back.
Yeah. And my daughter, whenever she would have to do round robins and somebody would come towards her to switch horses, and she'd say, "Don't have that in your hand. He won't listen to you. He'll get very upset." And he doesn't need it, you know.
Right.
And that's, I think that what people don't understand about kids, they don't need anybody making their life harder than it already is by being judgmental and hostile or even fearful. You know, when I was running my fair trade shop in Colorado Springs, I had a young man come in one day and we had a security guard that kind of wandered the neighborhood. And she came in and said, "I'm just looking at some pots over here." And I said, "Okay, Joan, whatever. And I'll be with you when I'm finished." And the young man had come in and he wanted to buy his mother a birthday gift. So I was drawing him out. What colors does she like? What does she do? You know, and we came up with something that I thought she might like and he thought she might like, and he paid for it and he walked out. And she said, oh, I just came in because that kid was wearing leather jacket and biker gear and had tattoos and a note. You know, his nose was pierced, and I'm going, he was a very polite young man, and he just wanted help buying a gift for his mom. You know, so, you know, I was grateful to be blind that day because I didn't treat him as if he were a prospective shoplifter.
Right. And I have so many stories like that because we don't judge. I mean, there are judgmental blind people, plenty of them, and we probably all have our. But not that first snap judgment of, whoa, this person is trouble, right when we interact with them.
Yeah. And, you know, it really does. If you treat people with decency, you would be surprised at the people that will go way out of their way to help you. I got lost in Portland one night, taking my dog to a distant park from the hotel I was staying at. And there were some Hispanic kids hanging out in the park because they have no place to be, you know.
Right.
Lots of times they live in very crowded conditions and, you know, so they're underfoot if they're at home. So they go out and hang with their friends. And they came up and talked to me about my guide dog. And then I walked out of the park and I got turned around and I knew I was lost. And so I heard someone walking towards me and I said, excuse me. Do you know where the Imperial Hotel is? I think I've gotten turned around. And he said, yeah, I know where it is, but I don't think I tell you. Would it be okay if I walked you there? And I said, sure. So we went walking along and talking about the evening and my dog and got to the hotel. And I said, thank you so much. And I kind of picked up by odors and stuff that he probably was homeless. And so I turned to him and I said, can I give you a tip for going out of your way? And he said, oh no, ma'am. It was a pleasure helping you. And I walked inside and the bellman stopped me and he said, was that guy bothering you? And I said, no, he was helping me get back to the hotel. And he said, well, next time you go out to walk your dog, ask one of the bellmen to go with you because that guy was homeless. And I said, he was also very nice. And it just went out.
I've been helped by homeless people. I've been helped by tattooed people. I've been helped by Muslim people when I didn't know they were Muslim. And there's nothing wrong with being Muslim. But when I got done, she said, you know, I wear the head cloth. And I said, okay. And she said, well, it's so nice not to be hated. Well, and
as long as you're nice, it doesn't matter.
No,
and I just want to let you guys know there are two more hands.
Okay.
I have a comment. Both of you, have written children's books, and I hope you continue this conversation offline. I think you both have a lot to say to each other. Thank you for that. Let's move on.
Who do we have, Trish?
All right. Next we have Tony, and then that be followed by Alice.
All right, Tony, go right ahead.
Well, first of all, Joe Elizabeth and I know each other. She has assisted me on a book I'm in the middle of writing with my girlfriend, romance adventure novel, and she was one of my readers. Thank you for help with that. You wouldn't recognize the book now compared to when you looked at it. We restructured. And also have somehow become the unofficial statistician for Bob's podcast. So you have about a 25% higher attendance rate than Bob's average. I just want you to know that.
Yeah.
Very popular, Joe. So now here's my question. It's a writer's question. You know, as a blind writer, there's a lot of things that we have to research. Sometimes we have to know sometimes things that you have to do as a writer, whether you're blind or you're not blind. So I'm just curious as to like what kind of assistance do you get when you're doing your writing that might be pertinent to being a blind writer, something that's different maybe or in addition to what a non-blind writer might need to do to get some assistance with their writing?
Well, I have the reader once in a while who can see.
You're muffled, Joe.
I'm sorry. I have asked beta readers once in a while who can see to check for anything that is a little off visually. And I have particularly male beta readers. If in my first book, I asked them to check for anything that might be off from a male perspective, because I'm female. And so I got a few suggestions where places to include more visual information. So that might be, I did include a few more visual details here and there based on my beta readers. So that is one thing that a blind writer might ask of sighted beta readers.
Hold the audio now.
Yeah. Well, okay. The research, which is knowing the content maybe to add in. Anything special that you would think you do that anybody else wouldn't do, or is it just pretty much the same thing anybody else would do?
Pretty much the same thing. If you have an area of research, like I asked questions in this book from a woman that was adopted, and I also asked somebody who had a disabled child, because there's a child in this book, so I asked her some things about sign language for young kids. So just find somebody who knows things about a topic that you might need to research.
All the audio now.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Joe.
Tony.
We have Alan, I believe, Trish.
Alice.
Okay, yes. Alice, yes. Go right ahead.
Now I'm muted.
Yes, thank you, Bob and Trish. And I really want to compliment Jo Elizabeth on her development of the very endearing character of the little brother, Terry, whom she's talked about as being mute. And I just, if all of you who want to read a book with a subplot with such an endearing character, Jo Elizabeth has certainly created a character whom you will long remember after you've completed the reading of this book. And Jo Elizabeth, I'd like one other point, the braiding that you had talked about, and Jo Elizabeth mentioned a little bit of this, but she carries that metaphor throughout the book so very well in a variety of ways. The braided rug that the grandmother had made and that is still used in the farmhouse, and the braiding of the main character Brenda's hair, and then at the very end, it's brought into the conclusion of the story very metaphorically as well. So it's just a beautifully crafted book. But Jo Elizabeth, I'd like for you to let us know, you've mentioned different foods in this book, and that's a very minor subplot, but hummingbird cake, I used to make those a long time ago. Where you came across that recipe, and it, really the way you've tied in the food with the chapters is an interesting weave through the novel as well. But please, I read this book by means of Kindle on my Echo Dot, and let everybody know about your other books. I've read, I think, all of them in one form or another, but please let everybody know where they can find your books.
Well, Hummingbird Cake, I came across at a church potluck, actually, and I really liked it. And so I thought, oh, that would be perfect. I've never made one. I can't have bananas. And so I had to take a Benadryl, actually, after I ate it, because I didn't know it had bananas in it until, so that was kind of a memorable experience. But I have a website that is brightsideauthor.com, like looking on the bright side, brightsideauthor.com, and you can go there and find.
Brightsideauthor.com.
Mm-hmm. And you can find my books from there. Or you can go to Amazon and find them from there. But from my website, brightsideauthor.com, you can get on my mailing list. I have, send out a few emails a month or you can get on my Facebook from there or my YouTube videos and all kinds of fun stuff. So that's the best way. My books are on paperback or Kindle. I'm working on Audible for this one, but it's taking a lot longer than I thought because it turned into a hassle. But it will be out on Audible. My three of my books are on Audible right now, so you can go there. I have another novel that's called The Bright Side of Darkness, and then I have two memoirs and a book of poetry. Poetry is not on Audible yet because I can't do everything at once, but the novel and the two memoirs are.
Are they on
Bard? And we have 4 minutes.
Thank you, Trish.
The first book, The Bright Side of Darkness, is on Bard. It's DBC 13147 on Bard. And it's also on Bookshare, but the rest of them I'm still working on getting on Bookshare.
I one thing I want to say about this book, but this is not the kind of book where it's, you know, happy, go lucky, everybody gets along well together, you know, takes in the insider and everybody lives happily ever after. Although there's a lot of stuff that goes on that's disturbing. Not just what goes on in the city, in the server, there are things that go on. There are a couple of moments that are kind of scary. Nothing, you know, Stephen King-ish, but certainly not pleasant either. And so, you know, this is, you get this book, it's not really the kind of book that's just easy reading and we all get along. There are some interesting things that happen that happen.
I can't write Everybody Gets Along and Laura Ingalls and, you know, that's not the way I do things. So there's always going to be a little bit of tension because that's the real world.
More realistic, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot to be said. It makes the book a lot better is really what I'm trying to say because of those tensions and conflicts and things that happen that get woven together at the end. So, that's what I want to say. So what are you working on now in the future? What are your plans?
I'm not sure. I haven't started yet. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Okay. And is there anything you would like to sort of say about the book that hasn't already been said already besides buy the book and read it because it's really good?
I guess I hope that this book really empowers people and empowers them in a positive way because people have control of their lives and a lot of them don't know that yet.
Yeah, I think that's really true. So I thank you for joining us and I thank you for your other book, The Bright Side of Darkness, which I also thought was terrific.
Yeah, and we are out of time, Joe, and we appreciate you coming on and hopefully we will all get to read your book. We are looking forward to that. And also good luck in the future. If you have anything else that you want to work on, you know, let us know about it. We'll promote it like we promoted this book. And thank you for being a guest on The Perspective. Thank you, everyone. And go safe with God's abundant blessings. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care.